You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
.59 in the great city of Chicago. You're listening to Cap and Company in the First Midwest BO on ESPN 1000. Tom Ricketts kind enough to join us now here. He's got a brand new manager, and now we're into the offseason. Good morning, Tom. Thank you for taking time for us. How are you today?
I'm great, Cap. How are you?
I'm doing very well. First, your thoughts on your new manager, David Ross.
I think he'll be great. I mean, basically, the manager has to do two things, right? They have to manage the game, and they have to manage the clubhouse. And, David has been a proven winner everywhere he's been. He was talked about as manager potential even before he was a Cub, as his career was, moving along in Boston. And everyone's always thought he had that kind of future for him. And then, once you get to know the guy in person, you just know how much he can motivate his players. And you really just have a lot of confidence that he's going to do the right things for us. And we're just excited to get him started.
So how much input does a Tom Ricketts have in the hire of a David Ross when he goes through two different interviews and Girardi comes in and Joe Espada comes in and Gabe Kapler and whoever else? Do you sit in on those interviews or, hey, man, that's Theo and Jed's deal. I stay far away.
More the latter. As we get toward the end, as they narrow down the candidates, I'll get more information, and particularly with Joe Espada, because he was kind of an unknown, at least to me, before the process. So, they brought me down to meet him for a little while and to chat. But in general, it's their decision. If there's a way that I can add some insight or some value to it, I'll say something. But it's something where they bring the answer to me. Now, of course, with Ross, pretty much a known entity, someone I've known for a long time, and he's been around here a lot even after he stopped playing. There was not much for me to do on that front. I always was confident in David, but I did meet a couple of the other candidates.
Now, I am never going to have enough money to buy a team. I'm never going to be the chairman of a team. But I think that if I was in that seat, it would be really hard for me to not get emotional at times. It's just because that's who I am. You said to me something which blew me away. It was not on camera. It was not on air. And I said to you, if Theo and Jed came to you and said, we're trading, pick the great player that you have, whoever it is, and you went, really? You're trading so-and-so. If they laid out their case to you and said, here's why we're doing it, you'd say, you're the general manager, you're the team president, good luck, and I'll evaluate you on your job performance. Like, I don't know if I could be that person that would say, you're trading who? No, not happening. He's too important to what we do. Or I want that manager over that manager. How do you find your ability to not get involved like that?
Yeah, well, there always is the fan side, so there'll always be an emotional reaction or a personal reaction to any type of trade ideas. But you got to take a step back. I mean, the fact is that if you're one of those owners that inserts yourself into the personnel decisions or the managerial decisions, for that matter, then who's accountable if something doesn't go right? I think that's one thing that we always think about, or I always think about. The other thing is, if you want to have credibility with the industry, you have to let your GM and your president of baseball make the decisions. I just think that I'm not going to add a lot of value in a lot of these decisions from my chair. I don't really know enough to overrule the guys. And if I do, then it goes wrong, then whose fault was it? So I think that chain of accountability is really important, that you let your general manager make all the decisions.
By the way, a bunch of people have tweeted in or have texted me and said, how come Tom wasn't at the David Ross press conference on Monday? I know Laura was there, but you were not.
Oh, yeah, I had a great day on Monday. I was testifying in a tax court in Washington, D.C. with the IRS and Tribune matter. So that's why I missed David Ross's event. I wish I could have been there.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, I lead a great life.
All right, so I've got to ask you, because I was there when you said it. I was at spring training, and as soon as you said it, I went, that's going to come back and haunt him. When you made the comment, I don't remember which media member asked the question, but you were in the room at Sloan, and you said, because there's no more money. We don't have any more money. And that comment has been played over and over and over again, that the Ricketts are out of money, they're broke, yeah, they're this, they're that. A, do you regret saying that? And B, where were you at that point that got you so frustrated to make that comment?
Well, it was in the context of, why aren't we signing Bryce Harper or Manny Machado?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, particularly Bryce Harper got a lot of energy. And obviously the fact is that every team has financial resource constraints at some point. And, you know, maybe I could have been more articulate. I mean, the fact is that we've done a great job over the last few years building up the business, and our business guys have done a great job of getting the financial resources to put us at the top of the league. And we had the second highest payroll last year. We have the ability to compete going forward, I think every year, with the top teams with respect to the amount of dollars you put on the field. But the real problem is, it's not really how much you spend, it's how much you win. It's the fact is that the correlation between how much you spend and how many games you win isn't high enough. It doesn't going to solve your problem. I mean, if you look at what happened in this season, you know, teams that we spent more than every other team that made the playoffs. We spent more than a couple of teams combined that made the playoffs. The teams that signed the big free agents, they didn't really move forward this year either. So, you know, the fact is that it while having the resources to put on the field is important, the real key for us is to, you know, focus on developing the players that will be our future. Because you just can't buy your way into a championship. You have to build a team. You can't really buy one. And if you try to use all money, the other problem you have in the league is you start getting to the luxury tax levels, and you're paying fines to the league that basically it's a fee that gets split by the other teams. And then you get to the point where if you do it too long or for too much money, you end up losing draft picks. So, but we're going to always going to be at the league, near the top of the league in spending. But the real key isn't just signing the new free agent every year. The real key is developing players so that you have a more consistent return and just will have better results.
I was looking at SpotTrac, which has, you can get pretty good breakdown of every single contract that every single team signs with a major league player. Astros, 7th in payroll. 25-man roster was $155 million, $169 when you include all the injured release, bought out guys or buried major league salaries that are now in the minors. The Nationals were the 8th highest total payroll, yet they've got some great players. The Red Sox had almost $230 million. You guys are at $219 million, and yet neither of you made the postseason. So when you sit down with Theo, is your memo to him, look, I'm giving you a lot of money to spend here, but we have to think more long-term, or with 2 years left on Rizzo and Bryant and Baez and Contreras and Schwarber, we got to think short-term. How do you balance that this winter?
Well, I mean, first of all, as you look at that, like 7th and 8th were the teams that are still playing. There's a couple other teams in that top 10 that didn't make the playoffs either. You know, I mean, there's pretty big payrolls in Philadelphia and New York and the Mets and, you know, and maybe even the Giants. I don't know. I haven't seen the SpotTrac numbers. But, it just reminds you that you do have to build a team. You can't just go out and buy one. And with that respect, basically what we have to do is continue to refocus on just developing players. You know, what we have to be able to draft better. We have to be able to develop players that we bring up because over the next couple of years, we are going to lose some of the guys. There's no way that everybody can stay on this team forever because they're all going to become free agents around the same time. And we have to manage to that. And the way you manage that typically is to have players that are coming up through the system to replace guys that you're going to have to lose because you can't keep them forever. So it just reminds us that while it's a big benefit and it's a plus to have the financial resources to be able to sign players when you have to, the real key is to build a development model.
We're talking to Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts here on ESPN 1000 on Cap and Company. Theo was incredibly honest in his 81 minutes with the media at the end of the season, and he said there's going to be real impactful change coming. It was obvious already that the news was already out that Joe was going to be gone. As you look at your team, if I had said to you November the 3rd, 2016, a day after you won it, Tom, you're not going to believe this, but you're going to get to 2019, look back and go, we didn't get back here and we've got to make a bunch of changes because for whatever reason, we're at the top of the ladder in payroll and we're not even in the postseason. Would that have stunned you?
Well, I think all of us looking at that 2016 team, which, as you recall, was the youngest lineup in the history of the World Series, everyone was projecting that young lineup. If everyone just develops as players typically do and improve through their 20s, that we would have a team that could contend every year. In 2017, we were pretty solid. You know, 2018 obviously was we fell off toward the end, and this year, we just basically just couldn't make it through September. And, despite some really good individual performances this year, the sum of the parts were a lot less than the whole. And we just couldn't execute in close games. And, down the stretch, we just didn't play good baseball. But I think that if I would have looked on November 3rd, 2016, I would have projected, better results in 18 and 19. But it is what it is. I mean, you have to players get better and some players have issues and, I would have projected more, but we have to play the cards we're dealt. We know what we got. We have a lot of great players. We have to put them in situations where they can succeed and bringing in Rossi is a good first step.
The TV network will kick off in February of 2020. Theo has said, I don't think it's going to impact payroll for at least a couple of years, but that statement he made has got to be at least 2 or 3 months ago. Do you believe that's accurate, or do you think the new marquee network adds payroll opportunities for you to be involved with whoever it is you want to sign?
Yeah, I mean, the jury's still out. Obviously, we're just getting up and running. First of all, I'm very excited to get Marquee up and running. For one thing, probably the biggest, complaint or comment I get is, how come Cubs baseball games are on 5 different channels? So, having one channel for all the games, having one channel for all the Cubs content, and being able to, do our best to bring some fresh and exciting ideas to the channel, that's all very attractive to us. We do have a carriage distribution agreement with DirecTV, so we're off and running with making sure the channel gets to all the households. But in terms of the financial side, we'll have to see how it plays out. But once again, we're already spending in the top of the league. I don't think that's been a resource constraint that has meant anything. Whether or not the channel generates more income or not, we'll find out. But the fact is, we're already there in terms of financial resources.
In terms of this offseason, what do you think ends up happening? Do you look at longer picture type decisions where, okay, we've got to think 2 years from now, you've got all these guys that could be free agents. Maybe some get re-signed this winter. How do you look at this offseason, or is it, we got 2 years to win another World Series and then we'll figure it out?
I don't think we're looking at it like the 2 years to win a World Series. I think we've got to the point now that we have enough resources and we have enough talent that we should be competitive every year and not have to think in terms of windows. But I'll leave it up to Theo and Jed to make the trade-offs between good, smart long-term decisions and good, smart short-term decisions.
Thoughts on the Joe Maddon era? He's now the manager of the LA Angels of Anaheim, and he said, I would love to play the Cubs in the World Series and then beat them. What was your thoughts on Theo?
Love Joe. Loved it. You know, I loved having him here. He had an incredible 5-year run. He'll always go down as one of the best Cubs managers of all time. Obviously, got us the big win in 2016. But I think everyone agrees, and I think even Joe even agreed. It was just time for a change. Try to shake things up a little bit, get a little different vibe in the clubhouse, a little different leadership style, and I think that will help our guys kind of get back and focused and get back to the playoffs next year.
How long ago did you have an idea, an inkling, that Joe wasn't going to be back? He did not get his contract extended, and it was pretty much, Tom, a fait accompli throughout the season, not just locally, but even the national analysts saying, yeah, Madden will not be back in Chicago unless they win the World Series. At what point did you go, yeah, it's probably not going to happen?
Well, I think it was always an option for the club. Up until probably near the end of the season here. I mean, if we would have pulled, if September would have came together differently, then it would have been perhaps a different discussion at the end of the year. Once again, everyone on a personal level, Joe's a great guy to be around, and was really a great manager for the club. But it just felt like after the way the season ended, this was probably the right decision for the future of the team.
Before I let you go, as I look back to when you first took over, Jim Hendry was here. And in 2011, I could tell you where I was. I could tell you where I was standing. I was in the basketball arena at Butler University, and I get a call. The Cubs are making a trade, and they're giving up like four really good young players for Matt Garza. And I hung up my phone, and I went, oh, dear God, they're giving up Chris Archer? He's better than Matt Garza right now. And
yes, I think he gave up Robinson Chirinos, who's the catcher for the Astros. Right,
correct.
Now.
He's still playing. There were two more guys in the deal anyway.
Yeah, Sam Fold, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
And one of our...
Hak-Ju Lee.
Yeah, Hak-Ju Lee. Right. Wow.
Okay, yep. So you go back to that, and it was... And this isn't a shot at Jim. Jim was trying to save his job, and he went, all right, I got to get a veteran pitcher in here, and I got to get a first baseman. And he signed Carlos Pena, and he brought Kerry Wood back. That's how far back this is. And it turned out to be a catastrophic trade because you gave up controllable young pitching. That led you to Theo. That said, Theo's now 2 years left on his deal. Has there been any thought to say, you know what, Theo, I want to make sure we take a long-term approach here, that we're not trying to, we got to win in the next 2 years because my contract's up, and extend Theo's deal right now?
Well, I don't think Theo's going to make any decisions for the team based upon the length of his contract. We have a very, very good relationship. He's earned my trust. He's hopefully fans trust him as well. I mean, the fact is that I think he's one of the best in the game. He's going to do what's right for the club. He's not going to worry about, what day his contract expires. And so I'm not concerned about that. Like I said earlier, I think that, we should be at the place now where we have the resources to be competitive on an ongoing basis and not think in terms of, windows, but our baseball guys, I'm sure, I trust them to lead us forward in the right way and make the best short-term and long-term decisions.
And again, it's safe to say that whatever you end up spending, you anticipate being at the top of the spending scale with the Red Sox and the Yankees and the teams that spend, you anticipate staying at that level.
Yeah, we expect to be top spenders in the league for many, many years to come, among the top spenders. The only issue we always will have to be considered of and manage around is the luxury tax considerations, which can be pretty onerous.
Yeah, because if, and I don't know if fans are aware of this, if you violate it too far over, you lose draft picks, and I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if you are a repeater, they can also have severe penalties where you have to take a step back, like the Yankees, I think, 1 year, went back to reset on the luxury tax. Is that right?
Yeah, every year that you are above the luxury tax threshold, which we are, you pay extra fines. So there's a fine, a certain amount of money you pay if you're a one-year offender, two-year offender, three-year offender. And it becomes very onerous by the time you're a third-year offender. And if you go too far, then you lose draft picks. So, you know, in general, it gives us the flexibility to stay in the top or near the top of the league in terms of spending. But there'll always be a consideration to that, because you can really dig yourself a hole if you're not careful.
Tom, thank you for the time. Best of luck the rest of the offseason. Here's hoping that 2020 has you back playing at this time of year.
Yeah, I know. It's tough watching. Even though there's been a couple great games in this World Series, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch the playoffs when kind of feel like we should have been one of those teams.
Yeah, but, by the way, 3 years ago today was Game 5 at Wrigley when John Lester and Aroldis Chapman combined and Chris Bryant hit one of the biggest home runs in Cubs history.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll get some more of those memories for everyone next year. But starts with Ross and doing some great offseason stuff, and I trust our guys, and we'll be back.
Best of luck.
All right, thanks, Cap. Talk to you soon.
See you. There you go. Tom Ricketts, chairman of the Chicago Cubs. 312-332-3776. Tommy Waddle is coming in the studio next.
You are listening to David Kaplan. Waddle Wednesdays on Cap and Company.
Waddle! Waddle!
I had a hot dog at the Sox game when I went and saw them play the Mariners. Smothered in in onions.
Holy stalks to us like that!
Waddle! Waddle!
Wednesdays with Waddle on Cap and Company.
Tennessee 11:27 in the great city of Chicago.
You could use a little Tennessee whiskey today, a little hot toddy. This is crappy weather.
I don't have TV today, so I can head home right after this.
Yeah.
I could have a little hot toddy.
Well, you could have a hot toddy even if you were going on the air. You just got to be able to mask it correctly.
Yeah, no, I'm not good at that.
You know what I'm saying, fellas?
I'm not good at that. Actually, I'm having dinner
Sylvie's the worst at it because, like, and he doesn't get drunk. Like, if we're at a place and we're doing a remote, like, he'd have one beer. And like, I come up later.
He's one can down like me.
Jason Hayward's going to join. Yes. And he's not drunk. He just starts to slur. And he's, like, totally coherent. And he's not affected. But it's just so he doesn't drink on remotes. Like, I can.
Smart decision. Yeah. Yeah, I can't.
See, I not only can I have one or two, I can hide behind this whole I got hit in the head a lot and just say, you know,
yeah,
that's not the booze. That's just every now and again I have weird thoughts. So I can hide behind that.
Yeah, I'm actually taking my son to dinner tonight at a place you've been. The Greenwood?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's I've been there twice now. Very good.
It's really good.
Yeah, very nice.
I'm taking Brett there tonight.
Excellent. Tell Brett I say hello.
I will. So, Tommy Waddle.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Okay. Yesterday, I was on the air with Alex Brown when I saw Dan Wieder's tweet pop up and got into this whole Eddie Pinheiro went, oh, God, you got me.
Yeah.
And Matt Nagy's going to speak in 15 minutes on this station.
Going to be an interesting.
How do you think he handles it?
I don't know. I don't know what's. I mean, I can't imagine.
Okay, should he handle it?
Well, let's take it back for a second. I can't imagine Eddie would lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if Eddie's lying about saying what he said to Dan, you know, and first of all, I want to take another step back and say to anybody that would think, and I haven't really seen anybody say that, but just to support Dan Wieder or our colleague, that was not a got you type of media.
No.
That was a legitimate question that was asked, and Eddie, in an inexperienced fashion, shared more information than I'm sure everyone inside that locker room would have appreciated. What Eddie should have said is, listen, I'm paid to be a professional kicker.
And
it doesn't matter which hash it's on. I got to make a 41-yarder. And he'll learn that lesson. You know, it depends
Bears uniform.
Right. You know, so if he is, I mean, here's the story. If he is being truthful and said, well, actually, I just don't know. We had Butthead on to go through the process. Said that should have been decided before the game kicked off. Like where you're going to kick the ball from.
Unless
the wind shifts. But that should be a conversation that is going on. And for the love of everything good and pure in this world, you had time to determine that because we stopped playing football with 41 seconds.
So what I was told was Tabor was with him by the kicking net. He said at the start of the drive,
yeah,
where are you good to right now? 52.
So distance, okay.
52.
Where do you want it?
He wants it centered.
So why in the hell is it on the left hash? Now, well, was it a coach mistake? Was it Mitch not executing?
Here's what I was told by someone who would know. He said, Tabor said, okay, 52 centered. He went to Nagy and said, 52, he's good, and he wants it center. And when they were going to take the knee, that he said, Nagy, to Mitch, just take the snap and go right down. Take the knee. Just take the knee. Never told him, I want it centered.
That's the head. If what you just described is 100% accurate, that's the head coach's fault.
Correct.
That's a breakdown in communication, and that falls on Matt. And if that's the case, then my expectation to answer your question now would be that Matt would assume responsibility for that.
And I like Matt. I would hope Matt goes to the podium, if that's true.
Right.
If that's true. And says, look, I did not impart that knowledge to Mitch or to the special teams or anything. I did not tell them to center it. I said, just take a knee, make the field goal, let's get the hell out of here. And that's on me. It's my mistake.
These are the types of things that happen when you're a team that is in kind of flux and in turmoil. These are the things that happen for teams that lose games. Teams that are good teams find ways to win games.
Like
teams
last
that
year.
I wouldn't necessarily call them a bad team, but a team in a bad way finds ways to lose games. Now, you know, I mean, it's funny. I was doing a lot of research, or, you know, I watched the first three quarters of the game today at home, and just kind of going through notes and preparing for kind of breaking down the game. And, you know, I was asking myself the question, what's the most surprising part of what you've seen so far?
Because
let me just lay this out before I really ask you the question. Because some of this could have been predicted in some ways. Like, we all talked at the, it's coming into this season, look, offensively, they got to be a hell of a lot better this year if they're going to get back to where they were last year, because there's no chance, history tells us, that you can rely on the defense to be that good and to carry that much of the responsibility. So the offense is going to have to make significant improvement. But if you go back and look at the offensive tape from the last 5, 6, 7 games and the first 2.5, 3 quarters of the playoff game, there are some offensive things that leave you scratching your head going, well, maybe this isn't going so well.
Correct.
And then when we were in training camp in JD and Dan Weaver were telling everybody, listen, this doesn't look right. And everyone was like, ah, you know what? It'll be fine. They'll get into the... No, it doesn't look... There's another sign. And then what you've seen in the first 7 weeks of this season is your worst fears coming true. Your quarterback has not made any improvement. There's been no development. The head coach looks shook right now. Defensively, look, they're still good to very good, but they're not great the way they were last year. But some of that... You know, when they took the ball away 5 times against the Redskins, everyone was like, oh, really? Regression? Where's the regression now, Mr. Smart Guys? Well, through 7 games, you got 11 takeaways. And it's not because the regression is they stink as a defense. The regression is history tells you, the analytics tells you, if you have 38 takeaways and 5 defensive touchdowns 1 year, the likelihood of you being able to do that again next year is very slim to none. Because it's just too hard to do that. So this is a really good defense, but they've taken the ball away 11 times. So project that out. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. That's 24, 25 times. That's 13 fewer takeaways, and 5 of them came in 1 game. So I'm not riding this defense. I'll ride with this defense. But the thought that they were going to recreate the magic that they recreated over the course of the season last year, I thought was unreasonable, which leads me to the conclusion that the offense has got to be significantly better. The other issue was health. I mean, I think there were only 2 teams in the NFL that lost fewer starts to injury than the Bears. Akeem Hicks' loss is
devastating.
Devastating. So I'll circle back to you and say, I'll answer my own question first. What shocks me is, and it's not even a shock, because while I was expecting Mitch to improve, I'm not shocked that they've flatlined with his improvement. I think I'm most surprised by the overall ineptitude of the offense, because, like, I watched the game today, and there's some, when they ran out of the eye, they were effective. And David Montgomery busted that big run, and there were some other moments where David was
difficult. J.P. Holtz did a really nice job
on a couple of occasions.
A couple really solid
blocks.
But
overall, Cap, they don't move people consistently. Like, it's not like they were road grating anybody. They just don't. That's just not. Mitch hasn't improved. The tight end position is really not good. So, I mean, then I would ask you, what really about what's happened so far this year is truly a shock. Again, I'm surprised. I predicted they'd be 10-6, win the division, but maybe take a step back statistically. But some of this, there should have been signs that some of these hurdles were going to present themselves.
And might be insurmountable.
You know, so what has shocked you most about the ineptitude? I mean, they've got better kick. Their special teams are the best part of their team right now. I think if you look at DVOA, I mean, they're fifth, I think, in DVOA.
Yeah, the thing that's most surprising and perplexing to me is Mitchell's regression.
His regression.
But what
led you to believe like it was just going to go straight, you know, north?
I'm not saying it would go straight north. I didn't think it'd go backwards like it did.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, and listen, all you got to do is look around the division to see why you're in the cellar. I mean, look at the quarterback play in the division.
Right.
Stafford's been really good.
Okay,
everyone loves to hate Cousins, but he's had a good year. He bounced back after the struggle here.
Let me ask you this. If I took I'm not talking about Rodgers. I'm not talking about a young Brady.
You took a better, competent quarterback.
I'm talking about Stafford, Cousins, Dak Prescott.
I get who you're saying. Yeah.
Matt Ryan. Group. If I dropped one of those guys in with the knowledge of the offense,
it would look different.
How much different?
It would. I'll put it the best way I could answer that question is I don't think they stopped playing football with 41 seconds and a timeout on Sunday. Whereas I don't think they stopped doing their thing. I think that they can. I think it would be better. I think you would see . You know, I see some people on Twitter saying, "Well, how Mitch wasn't that bad? You see him hit some of those throws." I'm telling you, I tell my kids, you don't get extra credit for not doing drugs.
Some of those are wide open.
You have to. That's at the baseline. That's what you are expecting.
The one he threw to Trey Burton was a great throw.
Okay,
that's one.
Okay, yeah. That's it. I mean, like, dude, there's a reason why you know Johnny on the couch in the northern suburbs isn't the quarterback of the Bears. It does take something. I mean, that's what you're expected to
do. Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think that Matt is calling his game plan? Yeah,
I heard you talking with Dan. I don't think there's been a drastic change. I think they do some things. I think the coach is shook. I just do. I'm not absolving him of blame. I mean, what they did, their clock management was bad. I would have not stopped playing football. I think the coach in some ways has got the... It's like, this is a simple question. Do you think they would have knelt on it, if that's the right word, with 41 seconds to go if... Let's just use a name. Deshaun Watson was his quarterback?
No.
I don't.
And I think they'd have thrown the ball.
Now, again, and I'll ask you,
a safe route.
And this is one of the things that really kind of puzzled me as well. I mean, Matt was defiant on Sunday and Monday about, I'm not going to run it, I'm not going to throw it. It was 10 short months ago, not even that, 9 short months ago in January. Go ahead and look at the play chart and the video of the Philadelphia playoff game. Do you know what they did? They got the ball to the 33-yard line, okay? They throw an 8-yard hitch route to Allen Robinson. You're at the 25. Mitch kills it on 2nd and 2. He kills the clock. There's 15 seconds left. It's 3rd and 2 on the 25-yard line with 15 seconds
left. Any timeouts left?
No timeouts, but what's the difference? I mean, Matt's told you yesterday you're worried about holding calls and all kinds of others. You know what they did? They took a shot in the end zone to Anthony Miller. Then they brought Cody Parkey in to kick the ball on 4th down. The difference is there was some trust last year in what Matt was seeing from
his quarterback. That's the regression I'm talking about. Yeah. All right, Tommy, we got to roll because Matt Nagy's coming up. You don't want to miss it. Matt Nagy coming up next.
Our buddy Brian Urlacher weighs in on the Bears chaos. How will Matt Nagy respond to Eddie Pinheiro and Michael Wilbon at 5?
We get started straight up at 2. Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Thanks, boys. This hour brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Acura Dealers. Test drive the new 2019 RDX. Learn more at ChicagoAcuraDealers.com. Hey, shout out to my guy Michael Allardyce over at NBC Sports Chicago. He and his wife Chrissy had a baby boy, William Austin. 21 inches, 7 pounds, 14 ounces, William Austin. He'll play this for you someday. And you go, oh, my God. I was that little? 21 inches, 7 pounds, 14 ounces. Congrats to Michael and Chrissy Allardyce. And happy birthday to one of our P1 listeners, William Chase. Happy birthday, kid. Thanks for listening to the show. 312-332-3776. As soon as Matt Nagy walks up to the podium, which should be in mere moments, we will carry it for you right here on NBC Sports Chicago. He's got a lot that he's got to answer for, and I'm sure it's going to start right away at the start of the news conference. Here is what the controversy was yesterday, if you're just joining us.
Before the last kick, what's ideal for you in terms of positioning, left hash, center, right hash? What goes into that for you?
Just the aiming points. The left hash is going to be a different kick than the right hash, and it's going to be a different kick in the middle. So,
for that last one, do you want the left hash?
No, I didn't, but, I mean, it is what it is.
What would you prefer on that? Center?
He just got me on that one.
But honestly, I mean, is a center ideal for you in that situation?
I guess. I don't know.
That will lead us into Matt Nagy as soon as he steps to the podium, because that apparently was never, ever imparted on the offense, and he did not get the ball where he wanted it. Now, the bottom line is, you still got to make the kick. 41 yards, solid weather conditions, professional kicker, game on the line. You can't miss from 33 earlier in the game and then miss from 41 and cost your team the game. You just can't. So we'll find out as soon as he goes back to or goes to the podium. We'll have it for you here on ESPN 1000. I asked Tommy what he thought he was going to say. He said, I don't know. I'm really interested to hear. Danny, what do you expect to hear from Matt today? Well, give me your prediction. You're always Nostradamus.
I expect him to say the right things. I expect him to say that was on me. I expect him to take the blame. I sure hope he does. I mean, that's what a head coach has to do. We said it yesterday, even before we knew what you found out, that Matt Nagy knew that he didn't want to be on the left hash. We said this falls on the head coach, so he owes it to his kicker and his team to take the blame.
Yeah. I hope he pulls the curtain back and gives us his thoughts on exactly what happened. So, we'll see. 312-332-3776 is the phone number. Again, I think it's one of the more interesting and impactful press conferences we're going to hear in a while, because there's actually something to discuss. It's not just, okay, what do you got for me? It's people are going in there and they want an answer to a question.
Did you happen to watch a Colts game yesterday?
I didn't.
You understand me? Did I just say that? What did I say? What was it?
Do you anticipate him being testy? The last two press conferences, he's been pretty testy with the media. Do you expect him to do that?
I'm totally with you.
Do I expect him to be testy?
Yes, he has been as of late, yeah.
Look, I give him a pass on being testy Sunday, 10 minutes after losing in gut-wrenching fashion for your third straight loss. He's not having a cold one, having a couple of laughs.
Okay, Cap, so why was he telling Mark Potash to go watch the Colts game then?
Did you happen to watch the Colts game yesterday?
That's different. That's the next day.
Yeah, that's my point.
Correct. That's the next day. That's different. The testiness on Sunday, some people get offended by that. Brethren in the media, lighten up, Francis. I don't have a problem with it. His juices are flowing. He's pissed. They just lost. His quarterback is whatever. Yeah, I have no problem with it.
I think it's funny that people get upset that he was testy, but yet the most popular coach in Chicago sports history is Mike Ditka, who basically, if you look up the definition of testy in the dictionary, you see his face.
Right. But the people who are amused by that, none of them had to sit in front of him and get read the riot act. It's the same thing like when I went to a Bob Knight press conference. Like, you're going, wow, where is this thing headed? I've watched him just crush some media people. Crush! And he doesn't care. I'm talking about Knight. And nor did Ditka. But, you know, Matt's a competitive dude. He's trying to be accommodating the media. He's trying to do all the right things. And his team loses in gut-wrenching fashion. And then he gets that question. And then he gets another. And he's had enough. I get it. 24 hours later, not as much. And he would probably tell you that, too, as he cools off. Soon as he steps up there, we'll go right to it. 312-332-3776. What do you think you're going to hear? Because Matt has some questions to answer up at Halas Hall. What do you expect out of this. Do you have any hope that this season could still be saved? Many do not. Hey, Chris, I got a good NFL stat for you.
Yeah.
If Lamar Jackson rushes for 100-plus yards on Sunday, become the first quarterback in NFL history with 100-plus rushing yards in three straight games, and the first quarterback to rush for 100 yards in a game against the New England Patriots since Bill Belichick was named head coach.
I'll guess after we hear from Matt Nagy, as the media is assembling around the podium and Matt Nagy is about to walk to the podium up at Hallis Hall. Okay, Cap?
All right.
So I'll answer that afterwards, okay?
All right. You can tell Carmen York your answer. Matt Nagy is walking to the podium. Here we go.
Want to start off by just saying we're excited to get going here with this with the Eagles. We have a good mindset right now. Just got back out from the walkthrough, and so that's it's good for us just mindset wise. Our message is just to go 1-0. That's all we can do. That's all we can control. And that's where we're at. So it's been a good last day or two, and we'll have a good practice today.
Eddie said yesterday that he would prefer to not hit the cash mark. What do you need to do to make sure that that's communicated to you? You get in the spot.
Yeah. No. We have a communication process that we use, and you know we understand everything that just went on in this past game, and he knows it. We know it. And for us, we've moved on. You know, that's something that we have a clear communication process. We used it, and we've all talked about it, and we're literally on to the Eagles right now. So it's for us. We just felt like in that situation where we were that we're good to go. And you know, Eddie knows. I think he said it to y'all. He knows that he's going to make that kick, and we all felt that there was a trust factor there too. None of that got lost. And as I said before, we have ultimate trust that the same time the next time that happens, we get on that situation, he's going to make it. So, that's where we're at on that. And again, for us, we're just so looking forward to, in our world, right, we try to do that 24-hour deal, but then we want to learn from things as much as we can throughout the whole game, not just from one play, and then we move on. And that's what we're doing.
Matt, when you have somebody like you come off a game like you just had,
yeah,
and you're playing for the Eagles, do you look at what, obviously you look at what they do or don't do, do you look at yourself, how hard do you look at yourself and you say, well, we can run the ball?
Mm-hmm.
Does what you just accomplished factor into the next game plan?
Yeah, it definitely does, especially with our situation and the fact that we were struggling so much in the run game. And not that we weren't putting an emphasis on it before, but we're just looking for answers in a lot of different ways and trying to adapt as much as we can with our players, with our scheme. And if we think that we found something to where we have something that works, we want to build off of that. It was for us, as much as it stinks that we lost, we want to make sure that we pull the good from it. And what is that? And then once you know what that is, now you realize that they know that too. You know, and what are they going to do? What are their adjustments going to be? And then how are we going to counteract that?
Okay. You mentioned that 1-5 start with the Chiefs before.
Yeah.
To Doug Peterson about it. What do you remember exactly, whether it's Coach Reed's message or the quarterback play that kind of led into it?
Sure. The number one natural feeling I remember as a coach specifically was, it's really easy to just start feeling, because we lost 5 in a row. And it for us, it was you got to a point to where it was just like, man, this is really challenging. I mean, you put in all this time and effort, the players put all this time and effort, and you can't get that win. And we knew it's not a need thing, but it's more for us. It's just when you know it's going to happen, you're going to get a win. It just feels a lot better. So reflecting on that, we didn't change in what we did as far as the schedule, the logistics, how we did things just personally, you know, which is really easy to do in a lot of ways. It's easy to change everything you do because you're searching for answers. We never did that. And when we got the win, I think it was against the Steelers, we got the win. It just really made everybody just – ease up a little bit more. And that's right now what I think where we're at is when you have all this stuff that's going on and you lose these games and there's struggle and there's just different things that are going on, it's human nature for a lot of people to just tense up and you play tight, but then you don't play as well, right? You don't coach as well. That's not what we want. We want to have, you know, less of that so we can play faster, play stronger, play better.
How about the quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Doug mentioned that the team seemed to rally behind Alex as he got going.
Yeah, they did. And Alex wasn't a real vocal leader. He knew that a lot of the stuff was going to go on him in that situation. That's what happens at the quarterback position. But the thing that was really, really great throughout it all was he accepted that. And that's kind of like what we're going through right now with Mitch is like, hey, understand that this comes with the territory. It comes with the territory for me as a head coach. And how do we work through this thing? And it's by staying positive. It's by winning, right? And then once we got that one win against Pittsburgh, we rolled through 10 more. And I can't predict that in any way, but that's what we're trying to do.
Last year when you were looking at the Eagles for that playoff game,
right,
they were 4-6. They had just come off a 41-point loss to the Saints. Did you notice anything just in how they played after getting that one win that kind of sparked them to make the playoffs?
I didn't notice anything in general other than you could see, and now this is a team, you know, that just is coming off they had a Super Bowl, right? There's a lot of confidence there. They kind of went through the ebbs and flows of their season. They had some highs and lows, and then they were able to get into the playoffs. So once you get into the playoffs, regardless of what your record is, now anything can happen. And I think they had a little bit of that feeling. Here we are as a new team being in the playoffs for the first time in a little bit. So it was an interesting battle between two teams where they were. I just felt like it was an experienced team that just came off the Super Bowl with a lot of experience versus a young team that's playing that you know, they're new to it. And so I didn't see too much change in what.
As a coach, when you're looking at, you know, you're evaluating obviously what they're doing on tape, but do you pick up on body language at all? Is that something that you can notice when you're looking at tape?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I think body language is a part of energy. It's a part of having fun. It's you see that now. There's you want to make sure that there's different kinds of it, and then how is it being used? You know, is it controlled or is it out of control? And so, you know, just for me personally, like me as a person and as a player, I was a little you know, animated at times. You know, so that's kind of what I work off of and where I'm at.
Feel your quarterbacks.
Big picture, yeah. Your quest to remain positive and solution oriented.
Sure.
What do you see with this team right now that's sturdy enough to give it stability through some of the bump?
Well, you know, Dan, what I'm seeing is I have players that are coming up to me that are telling me we got this, coach. That's all I really need, and which is cool, you know, because this is you're put in a business, in a profession where you're at the top of the top with these players. There's a lot of great competition. So the parity in this league and the coaching in this league is really good, and it's close. So when you have adversity and you hit a couple lows into your season, you honestly never know how your team's going to react to it. Last year we went through, what, a two-game losing streak. Was that our most last year, a two-game losing streak? So we never hit this road before, three-game, and especially with the expectations. So this is the way I look at it is this is a learning tool for all of us, for myself, big time included. And so how do we use this to make us tougher for the rest of the season and the rest of the way that we go for all of us? And I always try to look at the good in things. And so we're somewhere, I don't know where it's at. I said last year when we lost to Green Bay week one. I said it this year when we lost to Green Bay. Somewhere, this is going to make us better. And that's what I just don't know when it's going to come. And I believe that the players coming up to me and telling me, coach, we got this. We feel good, man. We're good. I love that. And that keeps me going. Sorry.
Is your quarterback one of those players?
Yeah, he absolutely is, because he's at a point right now where it's been a low, right? It's been a real low for him, and he understands that. I don't think that's anything out of the ordinary for emotionally to know, because a lot of times in that position, right? What do we all do? You put pressure on yourself because you want to do as great as you can, and when the success isn't there, then everything goes to that position. Right or wrong, that's just what happens. And so I think what's important throughout all this is all of us, not just our quarterback, but every player on this team feeling support from one another. And that there, if you can do that, it just, when this thing does turn around, and the feeling that you get, because I did it in Kansas City, right, meaning us, the feeling that you have that you stuck through things, through tough times, there's nothing like it. And so it just really, that's what I think is somewhere in this message is something good.
Can we go back to the beginning? I'm sorry.
This is ESPN 1000 WMVP AM Chicago.
You're busy calling plays, right? I mean, things are going fast and furious. Are you receiving that information real time from, like, Chris, from Eddie, that, hey, here's the distance we feel good about, here's the placement we feel good about? Is that something you're just getting, like...
Yeah, we have a communication process that we believe in and that we use. And so, again, like I said, for us, there's going to be a lot of scenarios as we go. There's so many different situations, whether, you know, what time is on the clock, what's the down and distance, where's the ball at, et cetera. At that point in time where we were... Everything included, we felt really good about Eddie in a lot of ways making that kick. And that's what I said, you know, at the beginning. That's why with us feeling that good about everything, he missed the kick. He said it yesterday that he's upset as anyone, and he wants to make it. And so that's, you know, I'm okay with where we were. I want to make it next time.
It was odd to hear him say that. His preference was not the left hash. I'm just wondering, did he say anything to you guys? Did he make that known, I guess, that maybe wasn't his spot?
Again, I think yesterday when you all were talking to him, you know, there's a lot of things that go through kickers' minds in a lot of different ways throughout a game. And whatever his was, we completely support it. Again, there's a lot of communication that goes on. That's what we did, and we felt good when that kick went up. From that distance, we felt really good that he was going to make it, and so did Eddie. He didn't make it, and again, I lost zero trust in him as a kicker, and if we get in a situation again, he's going
to
nail him.
So, Matt, just to clarify, are you saying there was no miscommunication that needed to be fixed or anything like that? And
for, like I said, for us, we have a communication process that we used, and we felt very comfortable in that situation and what we did. You know, it really, it's a... you know, for me, it's just it gets hard because I'm so caught. Like right now on a Wednesday, I'm just trying to get going with Philly, but that's where we were. The communication between all of us was that at 41 yards, he was going to make that kick, and he didn't. And we understand that, and he feels as bad as anybody, whether it's on the right hash, the middle, or the left hash. You know, he wants to make it, and he didn't.
Is there anything that you've learned from that process? What happened that you can apply to next week's game?
Big thing is just for me as a head coach is that's a tough way to lose as a, you know, stating the obvious, but we look at it as like in a lot of different ways where it, you know, we could have done a lot of different things to make it not come down to that kick. Usually that's the case. I mean, it goes back to for us what we talked about before, but I just want to it's for us, we got to move forward. If we keep holding on to that, then it hurts us for the Eagles, and that's not really what we want.
Matt, some of the success you had with the power running game, how sustainable is that moving forward?
Just continuing to be, you know, just execute our assignments and make sure that, which is what they really did last week. I mean, there were some clips on there that were so detailed in execution in regards to fits and leverage. And so we got to just keep doing that. Now, schematically, we got to make sure that we get to what we like. And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, that wouldn't be fair to our team as to what we're going to do. But run game, pass game, et cetera, you know, we felt like we really improved, and now we just want to keep growing.
What step was that toward establishing the offensive identity you want?
It was a big step. It was a big step because we got the run game going. And when you get the run game going, it helps in a lot of different areas. So now we want to get that run game going, go ahead and get better in the goal to go in the red zone, put points up on the board, and so that we're scoring touchdowns and not kicking field goals.
A great network of friends who just happen to also be head coaches in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, like Doug this week.
Yeah.
Frank Reich in Indianapolis, the guys that you were with in Kansas City and Philadelphia, do you guys ever talk during the season? Like, we're going through a tough time. Mm-hmm. Are these guys that you feel like you could reach out to and talk about some things that maybe you couldn't do to other people that don't understand the situation that you're in right now?
100%. And there's a handful of guys, head coaches, that I stay in communication with. You know, the the number one guy is my mentor and Coach Reed. So I talk to him all the time, and I'm very, very lucky to have him in my corner because he's seen it all. And the best part about Coach is he just gives you great advice. He gives you great insight. You know, he's like a father figure to me. So when you're in a position where you're looking for a little advice on how to handle whatever it is, he's got it, and it always amazes me on the way he says it. So the other guys, Doug, Frank, there's a bunch of them. Text messages. We're our own fraternity, and I think that's pretty cool.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, there you go. That is Matt Nagy, and
I don't know, look, if we got any answers.
I don't think we got any answers.
Something happened.
I'm glad people followed up the original question, and then a little bit later they followed up. I did not hear anything, you know, really that answered the question. All I heard, he was Bill Belichick. We're on to Philadelphia.
Yeah, well,
let's not be too complimentary here. Let's not compare Matt Nagy to Bill Belichick.
Well, I'm not comparing him.
Believe
you me.
Did Eddie Pinheiro tell the Bears he did not want the left hash?
You will find no answer, but they communicate.
We don't know the answer.
As I said at the start of the show at 9, I was told by someone who would know that said to me, Chris Tabor was standing with him by the net. At the start of the drive, he said, "What do you feel good from?" He said, "I'm good from 52, coach."
Whoa.
He had made a 55 in pregame warmups in that upright.
Mm.
He then said, "Where do you want the ball?" "Center, coach."
Center.
He then was, that was relayed from Chris to Matt. "Center, 52. Center, 52. When they got to 41, Nagy said to Mitch, "Just go to the knee. Take the snap and go to the knee." Never told him that it was to be centered. Now,
Mitch never.
No. Nagy never told anyone else. Never told Mitch, "Center it. Just take the knee and let's get the kick and get the hell out of here."
Hmm.
And it didn't work out. Hey, Crosstalk brought to you by the Wolves. We are excitement, intensity. We are the Wolves. Get your Fan 4 pack, including 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and a popcorn for one low price. Fan 4 packs start at just $18 per ticket. Go to ChicagoWolves.com. And our Bears press conferences are brought to you by Goose Island Beer Company, the original craft beer.
Well, I don't know if circling the wagons is the right term, but they got a lot going on up there right now.
They do.
You know, it's a lot of, we got to stay together and find way. And he's right about that. But, I mean, geez, you know, it's supposed to be a Super Bowl team, right? And it's a lot of, well, we got to get stronger and stop making mistakes. How about that? How about start there?
Win games.
Win games. Stop making mistakes.
I don't care what they do. As long as they win games, you can tolerate everything.
Correct.
But when you lose, and you lose 3 in a row, and you start losing the way they're losing, then nothing is tolerated. Everything is going to be looked at under a microscope. Everything's going to be picked at. And this guy doesn't like that. He loved the love affair he had last year with everyone. Some of those guys are still on board with the love affair. Okay?
Easy when you're coach of the year.
I think the best advice I can give
now
to him.
Now he's being tested.
Yes,
the best advice I can give to him right now is install your offense. Have your quarterback run your offense.
And just see, just go down with it.
And if he can't run your offense, you remove him and get somebody else to start running your offense.
If I'm Matt Nagy, I think I'm with Yurko. I just said
he already is running his offense.
I don't believe that. I believe he's running a portion of it. He's running the portion that can be handled by Mitch Trubisky. You install it. If he can't run it, you got to get rid of him.
Well, Sylvie disagrees with both of us. So,
well, I don't worry about what Sylvie thinks.
So,
honest to heavens, not one ounce of sleep has ever been lost.
He thinks the handcuff should be on Trubisky?
No. Weederer was on with me saying he is running his offense. They're not handcuffing him. I believe that they're not running all the offense. And then I got the school bus emoji.
Really? We think this is it? We think this is all Matt Nagy's capable of? Man, that'd be a quick fall from grace.
By the way, I have news for John, too. Friday night. At 7 p.m. Central, you need to be in front of your TV. They named the top 100 NFL games of all time.
Games.
Friday night at 7 p.m., they will play the number 78 game of all time.
Is it the birth of the Lambeau Leap?
That would be the Jaguars' playoff upset over the Broncos in the AFC divisional game.
Number 76?
Yeah, 78. That's got to be higher.
We're 14-point dogs.
That's right, in a playoff
78.
Game.
kid.
Hey, somebody have Tommy call Bill Romanowski and tell him not to be around the television. Boy, he had a couple free blitzes where he ended up missing Mark Brunell.
Jimmy Smith just tweeted. Mark Brunell tweeted that it was his favorite moment of his career, and sure. Jimmy Smith said, my favorite moment also.
Yeah, Keenan had a big touchdown. Natron Means caught a big ball in that game. It was a fun game. Great to be involved in that
one. So you'll have to watch that one.
Unfortunately, I'll be going to the airport.
Yes, off to Pinehurst.
Off to Pinehurst, kid.
Oh, boy.
Actually, I'll already
be in Pinehurst.
Set the DVR, kid. Yeah. Set the DVR.
Oh, no, I've got video of that game.
Why does he have
a DVD of that game already.
But you need all the accoutrements to come with.
I can take a look at that one. And listen, I only play about 30% of that game, so 3 of every 10, I'm out there. Once we were up and they went to 3 wide receivers.
That's it.
Well, I didn't see much of the field.
Johnny Handsome's not on the field.
See me
then.
On the sideline cheering. Come on, boys.
Go get him, boys.
Hey, the old man still got a lot left in him. Matter of fact, they have that on NFL films.
Do they?
The old man's still capable of magic.
Is that what you were saying about Elway?
Yeah. You see the cameras. You got to come up with something, right?
You're special. You know that?
You mic me up.
Yeah, once they go 3 wide.
Yeah.
That's it.
3 wide, I'd go to the bench.
11 personnel, you're early on the bench.
Pass rushers coming in, boom, straight to the bench.
What did you think of the ruling at first base last night?
I thought it was bad, but...
They got the rule right.
You
got
to redo the rule then. Listen, running to first base can't be that complicated.
Agreed. I mean, but the way it was ruled was correct.
I mean, isn't Trey Turner entitled to the base? He was in the middle of the baseline when that ball hit him. I mean, you're not entitled to the base?
I don't disagree.
Well, I don't understand. I mean,
if you don't disagree, are you agreeing? Is that what you're saying?
He knocked off the glove. Well, because the throw was in his back while he was directly over the top of the base. I don't get it. You can't have a rule that's that complicated. Running to first base can't be that complicated.
Agreed.
Sorry.
They got to fix it.
So maybe they got it right. And we're biased. Maybe it's not fair for us to chime in on this because we're biased. We have a rooting interest in the Nats. And luckily it didn't haunt them. They won anyway. And now we're on to tonight. But you watch that. You're not out just because you ran inside the baseline. You're out if you interfere. How is he interfering when he's not outside the baseline with the play at first base?
Doug Glanville was tweeting about it last night, and he said, much as I hate base running rules.
I don't get it.
That is, and Len Casper tweeted, they got the rule right, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't change the rule.
But how? Wasn't Trey Turner directly over the base when the ball hit him? Am I nuts? He wasn't right in the middle of the baseline when the ball hit him?
He was.
So how is that getting the rule right? The rule says you can't be in the middle of the base?
I guess where he was wrong. I don't know. I don't know.
You're not out the minute you go inside the baseline. I mean, I tweeted you the picture of the inning later. Jose Altuve was running inside the baseline. You're not out unless you interfere with somebody. How is he out when he is when he is dead center of the base? You're not allowed to be dead center of the base?
You think you would be able to. Somebody tweeted out a picture.
Everybody's like, oh, no, they adjudicated it properly. I'm a baseball play-by-play man, so I know what I'm talking about.
How are you out?
Going after land.
How in the blank is he out?
I thought they would overturn it, and then I realized.
You can't even review it.
That was where I was wrong. I'm like, they have to overturn this.
So what were they looking at? Did they take, like, a popcorn break? I mean, what were they looking at if they couldn't even overturn it?
They must have done something.
Wouldn't it be funny if they weren't even looking at it? They were just like, well, let's appease the mob, and we'll pretend like we're looking at it, but we can't. Yeah. Hey, guys, you see the latest trailer for Star Wars? Ooh, yeah, it's good. Maybe they were watching that back in the league office. I was waiting for, hi, I'm Alberto Riveron.
Dave Martinez said he knew.
Hi, I'm Joe Torre.
Yeah, right. They had no chance. He just wanted him to look at it. He's like, I know how the rules work. He goes, I knew I had no chance. But
he better be careful with that ticker of his. He looked like he was going to rip somebody's head off. I don't get it. Change the rule. It's silly. I don't know. I don't know how Trey Turner or any base runner is not entitled to the base. I don't know where he's supposed to go.
Okay, Mitch Trubisky is at the podium.
You look fine.
Mitch, in what ways is January's game relevant this week as you kind of get ready to play these guys again?
I think we have we could look at the film and see what they did against us, and I think that helps for this week, trying to find some schemes and tendencies. But we've realized every year is different, every week is different, and it's just a great opportunity to get back on track. And our focus is just trying to be 1-0 this week, and we're going into a tough environment and playing a good football team. So, got to prepare, got to do what we do, and then just we'll definitely be looking at last year's film, see what worked, see what they showed against us, and just go from there.
Would you feel that you did better this past Sunday against the Chargers?
Yeah, I feel like I was just a little more comfortable in the pocket after being out for a couple weeks, just keeping my eyes downfield and trying to make plays for my team, putting the ball in the right spot, and just going to continue to make better decisions and stay on the field. I was better on third down, but not in the red zone, so that'll be a focus for this week. Just got to be good in all areas of the game, making decisions, good in the red zone, good on third down, and help our team score points.
Along those lines, you know, you had a couple, you know, some good throws, but a couple key mistakes late. Just in general, how are you feeling about where you're at with your game right now?
Feel good. Always progressing. Always learning from mistakes. Just always trying to get better, get on the same page with Nags, and just continue to stay confident in myself and my teammates that we're going to get things rolling and do what we need to do to put our team in a position to win.
He always mentions that he wants your eyes to be where his eyes are at. And Mark mentions eyes and feet all the time. Just in terms of those eyes, where do you think you are with Matt and being in?
What does that mean?
He just wants you seeing what he's seeing going through the
Yeah, for sure. So just being on the same page. So when we're watching film after the fact, it's a little different because I'm on the field and he's on the sideline, so we're seeing it from different perspectives. And obviously I'm seeing things that are going on to the field, and obviously I want to do everything right for him and run his scheme and get the ball where it needs to go within this offense. So afterwards when we're watching it, together, and we're just going through the reads. He's just making sure that my eyes are in the right spot, going through progressions, and then putting the ball where it needs to go within this offense. And there's a couple times I didn't, but most of the time I did. So it's just continue to fix those mistakes and make sure that, like you said, my eyes are going where what he's seeing on the film.
Mitch, on the 12-yard scramble you had in the fourth quarter, what did you see on that play that allowed you to pick up that yardage?
Yeah, I just went through first and second progression, felt like I had to move, and then I just spun out and was looking for a throw and then started to run and was trying to pick up as many yards as possible to put us in a position to hopefully kick a game winner, and that's what happened.
Coach Nagy has talked about wanting you to be natural with running the ball in those situations. That seemed like kind of a natural situation.
For sure. Not planned at all. Pass all the way. Just broke outside the pocket. And everyone did a good job just continuing to stay within their routes, stay alive on there. And that's why they kind of stayed in their man coverage and I was able to run and pick up some yards.
As you worked through your options on that play, did you get to the decision to run quicker than you normally would?
Yeah, probably because the pocket just something flashed. So I had to move and get out of the way.
Mitch, Matt said that guys are walking up to him saying, "We got it this weekend," and you are one of those players. Do you feel like you guys are close? What's the mentality of this team right now?
Yeah, for sure. You got to believe that, especially as, like, just the group of guys we have and, in general, being competitors. Like, it doesn't matter how many you lose. You always believe the next one's going to be a good game for you to get back right on track and go in the direction where we want to go. So it's just honest conversations that we're having with each other and ourselves and trying to find ways that we could just continue to improve and get better and get back on track. And the focus is being 1-0 this week. So just having that competitiveness about you that it doesn't matter what happened last game or who we got this next game coming up, we're going out and we're going to give it our all and try to get back on track with a win.
With that being said, what would a win do for this team?
I think it would definitely give us a lot of confidence. So, like I said, the focus is being 1-0, and I think it will hopefully jumpstart for what we got going the rest of the season. But like you said, you got to take it one game at a time and be 1-0, and that's our focus.
What's the difference for you in having an effective running game versus what you have? How did that just affect what you do, you know, how plays run the passing game, and just in everything you did, how much better was it to have an effective running game?
Yeah, I think it just helped keep the defense honest a little bit, and I think more than anything, it gave a lot of confidence to our O-line opening up holes, and they weren't always pass-setting the whole game, so I think it makes the pass game a lot easier when you have those defensive linemen. They can't key on pass all the time, just getting upfield, rushing, and working on their moves. They have to be gap sound and have gap integrity, and we did a good job moving the line of scrimmage and creating holes for our backs, and David and all the guys ran really hard, and it definitely, I think, opened up a lot on offense, and I think it kept us positive on first and second down and kept us in third and manageable situations that helps us stay on the field when we convert those.
What were your impressions of the way David ran the ball and specifically the way that the defense had to react to his abilities in the run?
For sure. Yeah, David runs the ball harder than a lot of guys I've seen. He's just ferocious when he has the ball in his hands, and he loved to watch that as a quarterback when you hand the ball off to him. So we keep telling our guys that when he's got the ball in his hand, just stand your blocks as long as you can, the receivers on the outside, the line, because you never know how many tackles he's going to break and when one could open up like that. So he's run the ball with a great attitude, and we love to see that out of him.
With the final sequence, when you guys come out of the timeout and you're going to the kneel down, what is your level involvement in the communication process about what needs to happen there in that line?
What is my involvement in the communication?
What's that exchange like?
Well, pretty much just making sure all the calls from Coach Nagy is getting communicated onto the field to the playmakers and who we got coming in and out. And
The very last one, on the kneel down itself, you guys are coming 3 seconds, you're coming out of a timeout. What's that discussion about what you need to do and where the ball needs to be in that?
Whatever he tells me to do, that's what I do.
So take us through that specific sequence Sunday.
Take you through it? What do you mean?
What did he tell you to do?
What did you see what happened on the field?
Kneel down on the left hash. So that was the...
That's what we talked about.
How conscious are you, Mitch, of your teammates watching you as a leader during this stretch of adversity?
Yeah, I think that's really important, and I think that's something that I actually studied for the first time this last week, because I've just been watching the film copies of the game, but this time I watched the game to kind of like... see my facial expressions, my body language, and what I'm doing during the game, and not just watching the actual film clips and how my teammates see me. So I think that helped me see myself from a different point of view, and how I can be even more positive on the sidelines, be more vocal, more hand gestures, and just continue to get back to like being myself on the sidelines rather than just being locked in and focused on what I got to do the whole time. So especially through times of adversity, they're always looking towards the leaders. They're always looking towards me and seeing how you're going to react and how we're going to bounce back and be positive. So even more emphasis on that this week, and you got to be excited for the opportunity, and you got to continue to come work and have fun. And that's what I'm going to do this week. And when everybody looks at me, hopefully they just get motivated and are ready to go and ready to get their mind back on track.
So that was the first time you watched the broadcast tape?
I'm sorry?
That was the first time you watched
it? Yeah, I usually don't watch the game top copies, so I just watch the film and go through that. So I got some advice, and Coach Nagy, he said I should watch that and just watch myself and kind of see myself from a different perspective rather than just watching the film. So I think that told me a lot about myself, and it was weird watching it because I really didn't feel like it was me. It just kind of seemed like a shell of myself, and I'm gonna get back to really leading in the way that I know how.
Is this something you plan to do going forward now?
Watching the game copies? Yeah. I think it's something I could reference. Definitely. Just continue to see myself and make sure I'm leading in the way I know how, and one that's authentic, and it's who I am.
Were you surprised to see your body language at all when you're watching it? Was it something where you go, oh, wow, I didn't realize I'm sort of portraying this publicly?
Yeah, I really wasn't doing much. I really wasn't showing any body language. It was mostly just like a guy who looked super serious and kind of tense, and that's really not me, especially when you're going out in the field and playing the game you love. You should be out there having fun, which I usually am, but I just am not showing that. So I think I can portray that in different ways, to especially that my teammates can feed off of.
Mitch, on the scramble on the last play, you slammed the ball. You appeared to kind of growl. Were you happy that you had gotten the ball where it was, or were you mad at yourself because you thought you should have gone further?
A little bit of both. I was kind of excited we were in that position. I'm not really sure what I felt in the moment, but I was excited that I knew we were in position at that point, and I also thought I could have gotten a little more. So.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Mitch.
There's Mitchell Trubisky. He says he was instructed. Did I understand that right? He was instructed to take a knee at the left hash.
That's it.
This is a strange one.
What was communicated to me is what I did. Very defiant.
And either we're sort of in the same place we were last.
Sure.
Yesterday, excuse me. Like, either the kicker is lying and just made it up out of self-defense. Maybe not lying in a malicious way. But maybe Eddie Pinheiro, when he was faced with Dan Weider's question yesterday, just the defense mechanism went up and he was embarrassed about missing two kicks and a 41-yarder to win it. He's like, oh, yeah, that wasn't my preferred spot. I mean, could that be? Honestly, I mean, because what else
could
is
it be? Yeah, it could be.
Could that be?
Could be panicked.
Could Eddie Pinheiro just...
misspoken?
Because if it's not that, if he communicated to everybody that he did not want the left hash, and somehow the instruction into Mitchell Trubisky's ears, and not even the headset, because they had called the timeout, I think, right? He was on the sideline.
Yeah, he was on the sideline.
If it was conveyed to Trubisky, whether it was from Tabor or Ragone or the head coach, Matt Nagy, somebody told him, unless Mitch is making it up and he's hearing things, somebody told him, left hash. So what could be going on here? Who normally would relay that? The special teams coach to the quarterback in a timeout or the head coach?
No, the special teams coach, they'd get together. They'd be all of them there.
So they'd all be there and they like Tabor would probably
say. This needs to go in the middle.
Okay.
This needs to go in the middle.
Because, again, they're not on the headset.
In the middle,
this
right.
This is a timeout.
There'd be a communication between them right there.
So is Nagy protecting Tabor? Did Tabor screw it up? I have no idea. To be honest, does it matter?
Up until the kicker speaking.
I mean, they're 3-4. Does it matter?
I've never known anybody not to know. I knew as a player where he wanted it.
Did you?
What his preference was. Remember, I was a short snapper.
That's true.
I was a short snapper, so I was there before the game when those communications were taking place. You know, where he was kicking it from, how far back we went.
So have you ever seen this?
So
an issue like
I've
this?
I've never seen a miscommunication like this. If there was a miscommunication.
See, Yurko, explain what takes place before a game, because yesterday I mentioned it, I think to Cap, that shouldn't Nagy have known this information before the game even started?
Or at least before the drive started.
We usually go, it was all noon games, so we'd go out 10 to 11. That's when we would go out, the specialists. The two short snappers, the two long snappers, the punter and the kicker. We'd go out, maybe the ball boys were all the return guys before the game. So it wasn't even any other players that were out there. There were some players out there warming up. During their normal course, they've got half their equipment on. They're out there just kind of get a little sweat in so they can get the body warm. But we'd start with the field goals. And then Larry Pasquale was our guy. Nolan Cromwell was the guy in Green Bay. And in Miami, it was Larry Westhoff. So you get out there and you're doing your snaps. And you get back and it's, okay, how far can we go? And then you see how much he'd make it by. What do you think he can make it to? He goes, okay, maybe 56. Stojanovic, 56 yards. That's what Stojanovic could kick. That was his thing.
It's a big kick back then.
He liked to kick the ball, you know, from the left hash or the right hash for a specific reason. If you had a little curve on it, I think if you have a little curve on your ball, you want to be on the left hash. If you don't have a curve on the ball, you can be anywhere. Okay, you line it up.
So if you have a little bit of a hook, you'd rather tee up
on the left side, so you can throw it out to the right and let it come back.
Right.
So you throw it toward the right, upright, and let it move,
yeah.
You know?
Yes.
That's what you would do if you have a little bit of a draw on it.
Well, he had a big draw on the one he kicked.
Well, and the wind may have, you know, there was a crosswind there. Chris Black mentioned that. But all that communication's also happening in the pregame. It's happening during the game if atmospheric conditions change. You know, I've played in games where there was no wind at the beginning. By the end of the game, you know, 2.5 hours later, suddenly now you have a wind. So that communication is happening all the time. The same way if there's an injury... the coach that has the injury notifies the special teams coach or the assistant special teams coach saying, this guy's down. Then it's up to the special teams coach to notify the backup that guy played special teams, the backup to say, you're up now on special teams. You're taking his spot in this, in this, in this. Hmm. So there's constant communications up and down the sidelines if there's an injury between all members of the coaching staff. When a guy's down, he's not available, you'll see the trainer go to the head coach. The head coach is notified this guy's out. The head coach then notifies his guy he's down. All adjustments now need to be made. So if it's a defensive guy, the defensive people make their adjustment. Hey, this is who's here. This guy's going to play. Then we're going to switch guys in different spots. That's the way it works. Everybody's communicating the whole time. Special teams guys notified. They know who's going to be the backup, who's got to go ahead and do it, you know, all types of stuff.
Press conferences brought to you by Goose Island, award-winning craft beer. We'll react to Mitch and Nagy and the Bears trying to right the ship here as they go to Philly this weekend. Controversy and fun in Game 6. What a Game 6 that was. And we told you yesterday the ratings have been way down. I wonder if it was better last night. Normally for a Game 7, you'll get some interest, so I would assume it's good tonight.
He had no football, too.
He had no football. That's true. So it was fun last night to watch that game. We got a Game 7 tonight. We're still alive with the Nats, so we got lots to talk about. Field Yates in an hour. He'll join us to talk a little fantasy, mostly Bears and NFL, but if you want to throw some fantasy questions our way, go ahead. We'll ask Field as we go into week 9. Use the hashtag AskField on Twitter and send them to my timeline at Carmen DeFalco. 312-332-3776. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.